Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
With Virgin Mobile. Freedom is calling to brighten up your winter mornings. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Now, RT investigates domestic abuse, a year in crisis. It aired last night on RT1 and it was an incredibly hard but important piece of television. It was just the stats, the stories. It was just the texts that were sent in after. I just want to read out one here. It says, "Hi, Jen. I watched the RT documentary last night and I was taken back to my 20s when I had to leave my house in the middle of the night with my baby son. My boyfriend had thrown a glass at my head. In the previous year, he had pushed me. He'd held me by the throat. He'd pulled my hair. He'd slapped me. I went to a refuge and they saved my life. It took years of therapy to heal the inner wounds, but leaving was the day that changed my life." Someone else texted into the show, into 51552, saying, "Jen, my sister is married to a man who we all know controls everything from money to what she wears. Our pleas fall on deaf ears. The whole family have begged her to leave him. I'm so terrified of what he will do. I've sent her a link to this documentary in the hope she recognises her story and leaves." Well, in studio now, I have Anne-Marie McMurrow, manager of the Bray Refuge, and was on the documentary last night. Anne-Marie, first of all, thank you so much for coming into the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. You're very welcome.
Now, watching this documentary, it's so hard to get your head around that this is happening to women up and down the country every single day.
Yeah, it is, without a shadow of a doubt. I think it was a stark reality, the documentary, and that RT have to be commended for bringing that to everyone's attention yesterday evening.
And what was the feeling amongst the staff? Was it like, oh, finally, we're being listened to? Because how long have you been in this business?
I've been working in Refuge for a long time. I won't show my age, but yeah, a long time. I think for the staff, it's probably for the sector across the country, it was a great opportunity. It's nerve-wracking for us because we don't make ourselves visible. We are known, but we aren't known. We're hidden in plain sight.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I think a lot of us were quite nervous about how the services would be portrayed. But I think the show did a great job on highlighting the issue. And the issue is that domestic violence remains insidious in Irish society. All ages, all shapes, all sizes, all nationalities, all socioeconomic groupings, all women are at risk, and some men, of domestic violence.
Now, last night, women shared their stories of physical and mental violence. Sarah spoke of how it all started. Let's take a listen to Sarah.
It started off with over-romanticising everything and love-bombing and treating me like a princess, and everything was wonderful. And then it was like a switch. He was upfront and told me he had abused women before in his past relationships. But of course, I thought I could fix him.
She thought she could fix him. Also, the love bombing, that seems to be a very common thing, isn't it, in these types of relationships? Is that a big red flag?
Love bombing, See, it's part of the cycle of abuse. So we know, and evidence has shown us, that abuse is a cycle. Domestic violence is a pattern and the abuse is a cycle. So there is that sort of lovely stage at the beginning of every relationship.
Yeah, the love bombing.
Well, it's not necessarily love bombing because every relationship has it.
Yeah.
In some it stays and in some it progresses on to something else. So that something else may be arguments, it may be tiffs, and then it may be violence. It's when it gets into that cycle that the sort of honeymoon period between arguments and fights and violence reduces and reduces. So it's argument, a little bit of love bombing, argument, a little bit of love bombing, and then all of a sudden it just flares up again.
Interestingly, she said in that clip there and last night on the programme that she thought she could fix them. Is this a thing you hear quite often from these women?
I don't know that it's a thing we hear. I think women try and they hope that he will change and become the person he was at the beginning of their relationship, which, as we know, is that love bomb piece. And I think there's always a hope there that he will change back.
Vanessa from Dingle bravely shared her story too. Let's have a listen to Vanessa.
When you're in that situation, you think it's normal, if that makes sense. He had to know where I was, what I was doing. He had to know who I was with. He started to time how long I'd be gone somewhere. When he hit me first, he was all apologetic. He gave me a black eye and my nose was really swollen. And I went into work and people were asking me questions. I felt like I had to lie and say I walked into the door.
So that really took me back as well, having to lie about this kind of thing. Do they feel judged if they're in a relationship that's violent, for, you know, violent or mentally abusive? Is shame a big factor in them not coming forward? Because all these women that we saw in the documentary, I mean, they're the lucky ones. They're the ones that had that picked up the phone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think shame is huge. I think guilt is huge in these women. And I think that's the voice that is now in their head. No one will believe you. Who will want to listen to you? No one is going to believe that of me, of the perpetrator. So they immediately feel worried that no one will believe them. They feel ashamed that they're still in this relationship, that they've stayed. They, I imagine, feel guilt that they haven't been able to fix him, going back to our last point. I mean, there's just so many layers.
And then when they do come forward, what we found out or what we saw in the documentary, when they do come forward and have the bravery to go through the judicial system, that's problematic as well, because it's long. And a lot of women said they felt like they're going through the abuse all over again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we hear that every day. We're only one service.
Yeah.
And I think across the board, all of the domestic violence services feel the same, that court, supporting a woman in court is just the very first step on a ladder. It's never going to be that first step is the solution, but it's the start of resolving something. Some women are very brave enough and will take it, and other women don't. They think that it's just too much, and they will never go for that order. They will just move on.
Yeah.
Which is great as well. Others will move back.
And it's awful because you hear these women say, oh, he has a history of this. He's done it before because he's probably got away with it before. But the system doesn't help women to come forward. It's not. It should be easier than it is for them to speak out and to go to the courts and go through that process. So what would you like to see happen there? Or what would you like to see change there?
I suppose that it become less traumatic.
Yeah.
I mean, we sit in an adversarial court system. So women, even though they're the victim, they're also the witness. And that's really difficult. We did hear one of the women last night talk about that he pleaded guilty, so he didn't have to say anything. He just sat and listened to her re-traumatising by retelling her story. That's horrific. It is horrific. And, it's just not good for women.
Another thing that came out of this documentary, which was, this was frightening, the abuse aimed at pregnant women and how common this is. And the fact that these, when the women, if they get pregnant, it actually, the abuse gets worse.
Yeah, it can do. We would identify pregnancy as a sort of an additional vulnerability.
Right.
So if a woman tells us, well, I'm pregnant, I'm newly pregnant or I'm heavily pregnant, that goes straight to the top of any services list for support. Not that we have lists. We do what we can at all times. But I'm not 100% sure of the reason why. I'm sure it's individual, but women are more vulnerable when they're pregnant.
Yeah.
Whether the perpetrators are, you know, feel they're losing control. I don't know what goes on in anyone's mind, but I'm sure there is, you know, there is research that says they're losing control. They're losing control of the woman's body. Her love is going to be more geared towards the child. It already probably is as the child is unborn.
Yeah.
But definitely pregnant women are more vulnerable.
And kids bear the brunt of violence too. Take a listen to Jamie. He was on the show last night.
He was always very jealous of me and my mum. Always very jealous of the love that my ma had for me and not for him. For a lot of years, I did end in blame myself because it was kind of, if I wasn't in the picture, maybe my ma would have loved him more. Maybe it wouldn't ever have happened.
He saw his mam, Kira, murdered. You must meet a lot of extremely traumatised children in a refuge, do you?
I think that everyone who walks in the door of a women's refuge is traumatised.
Yeah, you said last night, I remember you saying, they're so frightened.
Terrified. The word I use terrified. Is terrified.
And that's, terrified.
That's what we see all the time. Women jump at the slightest noise. A door bangs and they jump. To me, that just heightens our awareness of how really scared they are, how worried they are. In windy weather, the windows bang or a bit of a twig blows against the window and women jump. Who's out there? You know, It's really, really just, they must be terrified.
In a number of stories, we saw women returning to their partners. Can you talk to me about Anna?
Okay, so Anna would have been a young lady who came to refuge, a long time ago now, and subsequently left refuge. As all women do, it's only short-term crisis accommodation. I don't know what happened once she had left refuge. We normally don't know. And the next I heard was that Anna had been murdered, which was just, I suppose, heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking for all of us. It was heartbreaking for all the services who had linked in with her, heartbreaking for her family, who I know were so close to her. It was a very bad time for women in general. It was horrific murder. And I really only know what people have read in the press. We don't know. Once a woman leaves refuge, we know nothing.
You said in the documentary last night, you heard the address on the news and you were like, uh-oh.
It wasn't even the address. I heard the name of the area.
Okay. Wow.
And something stick in your head. And I had never heard of Ongar before in Ireland. I have lived in England, so I knew Ongar was in England. And when they refer to Ongar, I went, wow, I think that's going to be something we know about.
Do you get a feeling in the pit of your stomach when you hear or see these women go back? Yeah,
absolutely. All the time. And it's interesting, actually, you say that. I know on the show last night, Don Hennessy mentioned that the connection between women's heads and guts, you know, that gut feeling we have, is gone in these women who become victims.
Yeah.
That's gone because in their head is their partner perpetrator's voice, and they don't trust their gut anymore because he's telling them it's not true. It's not true. It's not true. No one's going to believe you.
Because that's the big question. Because I was sitting watching it with my husband, and it was only when the documentary finished that it was in his head. But throughout, he was like, oh God, why did she go back? Why didn't she just leave? And we needed that explanation. I mean, it's a complex thing. I mean, sometimes simply it's because they've nowhere to go. Then, like we were talking about there, they lose all sense of self, that they just don't have, they don't have it in them to leave. It's actually very, very scary. I mean, 108 women have been killed in Ireland by their partners. There has been an alarming increase in the number of calls to domestic abuse helplines. And there's still not enough space. There's not enough space for that.
No, there aren't enough refuge beds. And then the pandemic sort of exacerbated that because some of us who are communal and collegiate had to reduce our bed space down because shared space wasn't conducive to social distancing. There just seems not to be. And then we would have calls, we receive calls and we'd be full. And that again is At the moment, we're throughout the sector, we have additional resources, but it's only now. That's going to end. We have, you know, potential to support women in other ways. Our outreach supports are phenomenal. They're amazing. They're overwhelmed. But they work. At the moment, they're working in the community. So women are being supported, maybe to stay at home, maybe to stay strong, maybe to get strong, regain confidence, learn how to, and it shouldn't be on the women, but it is, learn how to just walk away until you're safe and then go back when you feel it's safe to do that, if you can. If not, look to friends, look to family. There are always going to be someone to help. There is always going to be someone to help.
If there's anybody listening now who is being abused mentally, physically, sexually, what does she need to do?
She needs to realise it's abuse.
Yeah.
She needs to realise she can't fix it. She can't change it. And she just, on her own, and she just needs to pick up a phone and get some help, whether that's to a friend, a family member, a refuge, Women's Aid, a domestic violence service. Just get help so you're not alone. You will never be alone, but you just have to sort of put on your big girl pants and make a phone call. And that's not easy. I so know that's not easy, but that's what needs to be done. You need to just talk to someone and find the help. And even if you can't, sorry, just to add to that, even if you can't speak, we know statistically that a person will make maybe up to 7 calls trying to get information or get their story out. Even if you can't speak, just dial the number and keep dialing it until you can speak, because we're always here to listen. At the end of the phone, we will listen until you're ready to speak. And when you speak, we hear you and we believe you. And then we try and help.
If you haven't seen RT Investigates Domestic Abuse, A Year of Crisis, it's actually on the RT player and will remain there. If you need help, please call Women's Aid. The number is 1-800-341-900, or you can get in contact with the Gardaí. Anne-Marie McMurrow, thank you so much for coming into the show.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.